to the last workshop of the 2019 Journey to Serenity Festival. It's on forgiveness and compassion. My name is Bill. And I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon.
You can get down off that step anytime.
Okay, thanks. So I have no particular expertise, as Karen said. I don't claim to know a whole lot about this, but I've learned quite a bit the last month trying to get ready for today. So if you hear anything that you don't think accords with good recovery or Al-Anon official positions, just take what you like and leave the rest. We have just an hour, not quite an hour anymore, because we have a hard stop in about 50 minutes so that the staff can get in and redo the room for the banquet. So I'll try and keep this moving along. I'm going to start. I kind of turned this into a little bit of a Tom Sawyer party. I'm asking some people to help me paint the fence. And I asked four people to come up and share briefly on four different perspectives on forgiveness. Perspective of forgiving the alcoholic. Second, forgiving a parent. Thirdly, forgiving ourselves and perhaps a child. And lastly, forgiving the unforgivable. So first off, to give us a brief experience on forgiving an alcoholic is my friend Pat from the Renewal Group that meets on Wednesday night.
Hi, my name is Pat, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. It's great to see so many familiar faces in the audience. What a great topic, forgiveness and compassion. When I first came in the program, I had no forgiveness and no compassion for the alcoholic, who at that time was my husband. When they talked about forgiveness around the tables, I would think to them, do you have any idea what this guy did to me and my kids? Do you expect me to forgive him? I just thought that was not at all possible, and I didn't know if I came for 100 years if I would ever be able to do that. However, I guess my higher power had a plan for me. The God of my understanding, which I got a new God of my understanding in the program, who loved me unconditionally, who forgave me, who had compassion for me, started to work the magic in my life. So as I sat around the tables and listened to people sharing, my heart started to soften. My heart was hard when I came in because it was full of anger. It was full of resentment. It was full of everything against that alcoholic, and I couldn't see anything else. But as I began to heal, then my heart softened to a place where I actually wanted the alcoholic to have the same thing happen to him. By this time, I had divorced this man. But we had five children together, so always in constant contact. I got to experience this in a fuller way when this man was dying. I kept telling my children, he needs permission to die. He needs permission to die. You guys got to give him permission. But it just wasn't happening, and it wasn't happening. And he would go into the hospital, and I mean, he had degenerative heart disease, he had emphysema, he had diabetes, he had everything involved with all the drinking and the lifestyle that he had led. Anyways, one day I was moved to go to the hospital, and I knew he didn't have much time left. And I didn't know why I was going there, but for the first time in my life, I really listened to my gut. And as I was going into that hospital, I asked for help from my higher power, and I got it. I didn't know what I was going to say when I got in there, and I still don't remember everything that I did say. But my higher power kicked in, and my higher power gave me the words. And there was a remarkable miracle that happened in that we forgave each other. Now, how many times does that ever happen in your life? I never in my wildest dreams would have I ever thought that that would happen. And for me, it was a miracle, and I know for him it was a miracle. The tears that I had shed at one time, thinking that he could die without ever knowing the love that I had received, the love of a higher power, the love of family, the love of friends, happened for him. He wept and he wept and he wept and he wept. All that anger was released. All of that resentment was released. The healing happened just like it happened for me. I've been a churchgoer all my life. I've done lots of counseling. None of it helped to the extent to heal my heart and emotions like the program did. In that few days that he had left, I had asked him to also make amends with his children. And one by one, he did it. Here's a man with no program. Here's a man who had not, no, he'd never said sorry in his life before. But because the higher power was working, because he got rid of all of that fear, all of that resentment, all of that anger, and felt love, he could do it. You know, I said to him, I know you're going to leave your kids some money, but you know what? That money will go. They'll spend it. It'll go. But if you give them this, they will take that to their grave. And he was able to do that. Without this program, I know that none of this would have happened. I will be eternally grateful for what I've learned in Al-Anon. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. Now, Emma Jay, who I know through the University Steps to Freedom group, adult child group, will come up and share his experience on forgiving a parent.
My name's Emmett.
Hey, Emmett.
This is just shitty getting choked up before I even start here. Can I wait till later, Bill? Jeez. Like at about 10:30 tonight. And, little bit of background. Grew up. Most of the time, single parent family. Didn't really remember my dad. He died when I was about 4. And so mostly what I remember, I mean, I had a good childhood growing up as near, for the most part, you know, like, I mean, I wasn't short of anything. I mean, yeah, sure. I was, you know, jealous of lots of the other kids that had a lot fancier toys than I did to play with and whatnot. But, what I didn't know, I had abandonment issues from hell. And that's what I really appreciate about coming to Al-Anon, is understanding or finding some other people that understood the level of abandonment. Like, I didn't even know. I felt it, but didn't know what it was about. So what had happened was, basically my dad died. My mom went back to work. My sister went off to university. My brother got shipped off to a school. And so I was left all alone, and really, I have gotten over this, you know. you know, for the most part, didn't know much of a difference until, you know, I started noticing some differences between what the capability of what other kids had or were able to do and all that kind of thing. I guess trying to keep this to a Dawn's story there kind of prompted some similarities of got to the point of, well, geez, will you guys quit crying out there? This is just not helping.
I'm not crying, you're okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to get angry then. Thanks, Marty. That was hell. You want to take your shirt off or something? That left you.
There are boundaries.
Where was I? Like Don said, about 12, I don't know, I started getting real angry. And, you know, acting out came after that. The drinking came along, and that those patterns continued for a long time. And when I sobered up, I mean, I knew I was angry at my mom. I mean, she married, finally found somebody to marry. Finally found somebody. It's like somebody found her, I don't know. This guy was a raging alcoholic. I couldn't have told you that that's what he was. I mean, the best I could have told you at that time is he was an asshole and drank lots of beer and had this big gut. And I mean, I had lots of stuff to complain about when I went to my buddy's place and all that. You know, man, he made the worst stew in the world and all this stuff. It was all about me, of course, and I didn't know anything different. But so that anger only built, and when I sobered up, just... you know, going through the process of trying to figure out why is life so hard, or why is it so different? Why am I feeling so crappy? Why a lot of things that Don said, I mean, I had experienced, you know, like all the other people that I was drinking with, like you people need to sober up. And certainly the people that showed up in AA, that I wasn't near as bad as him, but the anger was, I didn't realize how deeply seated that was. And so the best I could do at the start was, you know, trace that back to my mother and all the stuff that she'd gone through. And not that she'd gone through, I didn't understand it at that point. But I mean, all the efforts that she was making to try and give her family a good head start in life. So she would have been frustrated with some of my activities. My drinking activity, for sure, and I'm sure that escalated things. I mean, because, you know, on the weekends, I said, why do you have to drink so much? You know, well, you don't understand. You know, I mean, that was, I didn't know either at that point. Like, there was the guilting that would come along, you know, like, I mean, that tone, and that's what I find I'm so sensitive to now, is just even... from being subjected to the silent treatment and the study people's faces and all that. Are you happy? Am something going to blow up here? Anyhow, it all compiled into this anger to the depth that I'd never felt that towards any one person. And I was, well, mind you, there's lots of other people I was angry at, but I had determined that it came down to all her fault, because, I mean, that was a common denominator. Well, what are the chances? I mean, she was in my life from day one. Who else is going to be there that many times? And so as she got older, I just, and I went through the steps. I mean, even after doing step four, I didn't quite, you know, I knew what some of my part was, but I didn't, still wasn't quite there at the point of taking responsibility for my actions and all that. And oh, freaking stop.
You're not helping.
Oh, come on, Marty, say something stupid. I need... Thank you. So one night in, man, that does sort of work. Keep it up there, buddy. Yeah. In Taverna Restaurant. Just, just felt it all. Sorry, I guess that's about the best I'm going to be able to do, is that I was just, it was just a moment. So, fortunately, I mean, after that point, it was, you know, what I think a lot of the feelings that Pat expressed there was that I could treat her in a different way. And, understood a lot more about how the world works. And what a weight was lifted, you know, like, geez, it's like, I didn't realize how much that was, weighing me down. And, that was, part of how I explained my step eight willingness was there wasn't anything that I forcefully did on that other than, just go to meetings and keep working the steps. That's all I got.
Thanks, Emmett. Okay, I'm going to ask Leanne to come up and speak on forgiveness of ourselves or from the point of view of a parent. I know Leanne through the Parents Perspective Group, which meets on Thursday evenings.
I'm like, not sure. Oh, now I have to, I feel so tall now. Hi, I'm Leanne and a grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Leanne.
I'm not sure how I'm going to follow that up, but I will try my best. when I saw you writing all those P words up there, Bill, I thought you were going to put perfectionism up there because I wrote out my speech like three times because I, you know, wanted to make sure I did it right. You referenced Don's speech earlier, Emmett. So for you, it's interesting, you know, what perspective sort of you picked up on. And for me, when she started talking about blaming her parents, that really hit home for me because I am the parent. My daughter is an alcoholic and an addict. So when she was talking about how she blamed her parents for everything, that was my world. My daughter blamed pretty much everything on me, or that's how I felt. And the reality is, I blamed myself for everything also. So the blame that she was heaping on me is nothing compared to how I felt. When I came to Al-Anon, I was literally drowning in a sea of guilt. I think it's extra for parents because I always felt like there's something so wrong because we are to protect our children and take care of them. And when you have a child who's an alcoholic and an addict, there's nothing, or you feel like there's nothing that you can do to do that. I felt overly responsible for my daughter. We just started a step study in our parents' group, and we were talking about step one. And I felt like if I just believed in her, or loved her, if I could just, you know, I just wasn't loving her enough, I wasn't believing in her enough, and that's why she was behaving this way or making the choices. So I felt incredibly responsible for her and that every action, decision, everything that she did was my fault because I was her mother and I should be able to fix her and fix everything, well, pretty much fix everything in the whole entire world, because as you can imagine, I have control issues, which I'm sure everybody in this room can, well, I'm overgeneralizing, but I feel like a few people in this room can probably appreciate. So I felt a huge sense of responsibility for her and her decisions. So I tried to control everything, and the more I tried to control, the more chaotic our life began became. Everything in my life became. I obsessed over my child. And the interesting thing is that I actually have two daughters. So I obsessed over my oldest daughter. And the more I obsessed over her, the more I neglected my younger daughter. So you can imagine that along with that, so I had, I was carrying a lot of guilt. Guilt about my oldest daughter, guilt about my youngest daughter, guilt about the fact that I pretty much ignored my husband. I didn't even know he existed for many years. So my relationship suffered, my work suffered. My friendships, if you want to call them that at that point, I was living in isolation, drowning in shame. Pretty much all those really great things that go along with the disease of addiction. So that's what shape I was in when I came through the doors of Al-Anon. And I can't remember who was saying. I'm not sure if it was Dawn who said, "Do you remember the very first meeting that you walked into?" And I just put myself back there, and I was like, I walked down those steps to go into it. It was happened to be in the basement of a church, and I distinctly remember I was like, "I'm not going to cry because I do not cry publicly." And by the time I hit the bottom step, bah. Buckets. So anyone, and actually Bill, you were there at that first meeting, and I just sat there, cried through the entire meeting. I couldn't even, like, I barely remember it. And I think for the next about six meetings, that's all I did was cry. So yeah, from a person who, like, could not cry publicly, that's all I did for many, many meetings. But the one thing that I did get from those first few meetings was, and this was the first time I heard that, and it was like, this is why essentially I kept coming back, was the three C's: that I didn't cause it, I couldn't control it, and I couldn't cure it. And as a parent, I cannot tell you how those words were, like, they were a godsend to me, because I had this sense of responsibility. So that was, I guess, the first step towards forgiveness for myself. That and detachment. I had to learn how to detach from my child. So those two things, I guess, were the beginning of my road to forgiveness. So it took me a long time to forgive myself. I still work on it. It's not like it's something that was magical, or I had to work the steps a lot. I think one of the most important things that happened to me was I worked with a sponsor she's amazing, but she's like militant. She's not here, so I could say all kinds of things about her. She was like, "I'm going to come." And I was like, "How about you don't?" I love her dearly. But anyways, so if anyone who knows who she is, just tell her I said really nice things. But I remember doing my steps. And the one thing she made me do was step 8 and 9 was she made me put myself at the top of the list. And I had to write myself a letter and had to write a really loving letter to myself, because I had done more damage to myself than probably anyone. And I still remember writing that letter years ago. And that was like the first probably big step on the road to forgiving myself for what I felt I had done to contribute to the illness and the disease of addiction, because I learned that it was a disease and it wasn't all on me, which I am so grateful to understand today now. And I had to forgive myself for neglecting my younger daughter and for not participating in life, neglecting my marriage. So, and I had to learn to treat myself with compassion. And it also helped me to look at my daughter with a lot more compassion. And I have to say, probably the biggest thing is this program is such a gentle program. And I can, and I thank, you know, the program for that, because I can be so much more compassionate with myself and gentle with myself each day. And I extend forgiveness to others a lot. I never used to forgive everyone, so obviously that's an improvement. I am so grateful for the program and my home group. They are like a second family to me. And I, it's such a gift in my life. So thanks, everyone, for letting me share today. Thanks, Bill, for inviting me.
Oops, sorry. I'm kicking the step at Leanne. Okay, lastly, but not least, I'll ask Ian, who I also know through University Steps to Freedom Adult Child Group, to come up and speak on his experience, maybe forgiving or maybe not forgiving the unforgivable.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ian. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. I hope you can understand me. I've been pretty sick lately, so... That goes without saying if you're here, but I've been ill, so hopefully you can hear me and understand me. So 5 minutes is a very difficult thing to put this discussion into, but I'll do my best. So some context for this. I grew up in a house where you don't talk, you don't trust, and you don't feel. And my dad used to say to us quite regularly, if you don't like it, you can leave. So with that background, the morning of my 10th birthday, my parents had a fight with my sister. And later that day, she didn't come home. And long story short, she, because of the fight, didn't want to come home. And we didn't know it at the time. But she'd gone to a friend's house, basically stayed there quite late, and on her way home, she decided that because nobody would give her a ride and she wouldn't ask, she hitchhiked home. She got picked up by somebody who was on a pass from a mental institution where he was being treated, and she was murdered. Part of the hard part of this was that was my birthday, and certainly for me, I was a 10-year-old who was really wanting this day to be all about me, and couldn't really understand why it couldn't be that way, because we didn't know what had happened, we just thought she hadn't come home. My parents didn't know what had happened for 4 or 5 months. They thought she'd run away, and... my dad and mom spent that time looking for her. And it was in the spring that she was found, and we finally knew what had happened to her. So there's a lot in this that affected our family. But what I have noticed in my life with my parents and with others is that if... you don't find forgiveness, there's a lot of damage that happens. This is a spiritual disease, and that damage affects us very deeply. My mom and my mom's sister haven't talked to each other since that day. That was back in 1973, because my mom's sister didn't phone my mom to talk to her about it. She avoided my mom, didn't know what to say, and my mom never forgave her for that. So that's one example of how the family was ripped apart by this. There's lots of other examples in my life of where there's no forgiveness, there's no healing. And when I got into program, I knew this was an area I needed to work on. There was lots of forgiveness I had to look at, not just the person who killed my sister, but my parents, myself. I had to find a way to forgive God. And of course, the person who killed her. So if you don't feel it, you can't heal it. It was something I heard the other day, and I thought I had to write that down. And my family, we always stuffed our feelings, never felt them. So going through this whole process, we didn't talk about what was going on in the family. My parents kept it away from us kids. We were pretty small at the time, but even after that, they never wanted to talk about it with us. And it's only been in the last couple of years that my mom will even talk a little bit about it. One thing I've learned, though, is I have a spiritual disease, and I can't make it without my higher power. I can't afford not to forgive, because if I want recovery, I have to find forgiveness. So I'm going to read a few notes. So this person who killed my sister, I never met him. He died recently in an institution that he was in for the rest of his life. It was a mental institution because he was mentally ill. And, you know, I had heard his name once or twice, but I can't remember it at this point. So one of the things I had to do on this path to forgiveness was step one, realize how powerless I was over all of this. Another thing I had to do was accept, which was very hard. This had to do with me forgiving my higher power. I had to accept that my higher power loves people so much that he gives us all free will. And what people choose to do with that is their choice. And my higher power is not the kind of higher power that intervenes and takes that free will away from people. And I had to learn to accept that. I also had to learn, and Al-Anon helped me with this, was that when there is mental illness, bad things happen. And, you know, sometimes it's not those people's fault. Where I think, maybe you'll agree with me, a room full of people who have all been affected in one way or another by mental illness, because this family disease we have is a disease of mental illness. And it's really easy for me to accept you guys and the fact that you've gone through the hard things in your life. You know, who am I to judge this other person? I have no idea what his story was. All I know is that he was a sick person, and Al-Anon helped me accept the fact that he was sick. So I have accepted that this tragedy occurred to my family, and it wasn't any of our fault. Initially, I could point out all kinds of reasons. Well, if we hadn't have done this, or if it hadn't been like that, it wouldn't have happened. I've accepted that it wasn't God's fault either, or my sister's fault, or my fault. I've accepted that it might not even be the murderer's fault because of his mental illness. And I accept now that this is all in my higher power's hands. This is definitely bigger than me. And luckily I have a program, so I can give it to my higher power. So have I forgiven? No, I don't think so. I think I'm in the middle of those three A's: awareness, acceptance, and action. I'm at the acceptance stage, but I believe that there's some action that will have to take place on my part at some point. I just don't understand what it is. So that's where I'm at. And right now, the only action I can take is to pray. To pray for whatever I need so that I can move on and heal. Because I know that's what I need. So for now, that's what I do. I don't always remember to do it. Sometimes it's easy, believe it or not, to forget and stuff it all down again. But on my recovery journey, this is really where I'm at. And I'm just really grateful that I got asked. Because the moment I got asked, I knew I had to say yes. So, thank you.
We have about 15 minutes left, and there are handouts on the table, and they include some definitions. I find definitions helpful when I'm heading into studying a topic in my recovery. Surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, I often have preconceived notions about what words mean, and so helps me to get an official version of what words mean. And one thing that really helped me was I bumped into a definition on Wikipedia that also had some valuable information for me, at least, on what forgiveness isn't. It isn't forgetting, it isn't excusing, so on and so forth. So I'd like to suggest that at each table, pick a reading and a set of questions and share your experience with each other on forgiveness. Things you've been able to forgive, people you've been able to forgive, people you haven't been able to forgive. And I'll come back to the mic when there's a couple minutes left, and I just have a couple closing comments on what I learned. So if you'd like to go ahead, pick a reading, and talk to each other about your journey towards forgiveness. 2 more minutes. Okay, time is up. If I could have your attention, please. We'll bring this session to a close. Sounds like there was some good discussions going on there, so I'm sorry to have to cut you off, but we really do need to get out of the room so they can clean it out and redo it, and it'll take us 10 minutes to clear out. So 3 things I learned while I've been reading and listening and thinking about forgiveness and compassion over the past month or so. First, forgiveness is good for my mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Seems to me central to my recovery. If there's unresolved conflict, the healthy choice for me seems to be to let go and let God. To view the wrongdoer with compassion, to approach him or her and communicate forgiveness, if this is safe or if the relationship is going to continue, to detach and set a boundary if necessary, and then I need to move on. The unhealthy choice is for me to dig in, hold a grudge, try to get even, put up walls to protect myself, and spend a bunch of my present and future being angry and hurt about something in my past. So as I was listening to Al-Anon speakers, there are several good ones on forgiveness on the web. I came across one by a woman who was talking about the reasons why she wasn't forgiving before she came into recovery. And they're on the flip chart there, 4 P's. Al-Anon's like catchy things that you can remember because they all start with the same letter. So the 3 C's and 4 M's and 4 P's. So power, pride, protection, and punishment. So power, if you've hurt me and I hold that over you, maybe I can manipulate you or control you. Pride, how am I going to look if I forgive this? Protection, I'll be vulnerable again if I forgive you and let you back inside the fence. And lastly, punishment. I'm just going to get even. You hurt me and I'm going to get even. So 4 P's. Those all struck home with me, and they seem centered around my defects, fear, and self-centeredness. So I know what to do if I'm not able to forgive somebody. And that's the second thing I learned, that the inventory process, which I actually believe is a miracle, has changed my life and allows me to deal with things that used to just overwhelm me and make me crazy. The inventory process will let me forgive when I get stuck. All I have to do is look at who's involved, what they've done, how I was affected, what I've done, which of my defects makes me do that, and that'll get me unstuck. So finally, forgiveness can help me regardless of what's going on the other end. So that in itself is a miracle. So it might be happening on my end only, but really forgiveness is simply a change in my attitude toward a past wrong. The wrongdoer doesn't have to acknowledge the wrong, admit the hurt, or offer me an apology. And this gets really important when I'm trying to forgive God, who I don't think is going to apologize, or when I'm trying to forgive somebody who's dead because it's too late. So do I want to be crazy? Do I want to drag that around? Or do I want to be happy, joyous, and free? Forgiveness and compassion for me and for others. so much better than what I had when I got here. So thanks to the organizing committee for suggesting the workshop, and thanks for your attention and participation, and enjoy your evening.
Thanks so much, Bill. Before we just give a couple closing comments here, Ian has something he wants to ask.